You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bores. And if you hear a little bit of drilling outside in this recording, then it shows that at least some parts of the economy are coming back. Now, it's the morning after suspension of Corbyn, and Keir Starmer this morning took to the airwaves to defend his decision. Katie, what did you make of that broadcast run, and indeed the decision to go for a broadcast run at all?
It's clear that Keir Starmer wants to be in control of the narrative around what's happened. And I think the interview is interesting for a number of reasons. Firstly, the suggestion from Keir Starmer that he doesn't want a civil war. You know, we don't need to do that. I mean, we get into slight semantics as to whether he personally chose to suspend Jeremy Corbyn or, you know, it's a decision by a separate figure in the party because he's not supposed to be involved in it. But whatever way you look at it, you know, that is an action by the Labour Party he leads. So it doesn't look as though, you know, the civil war is just happening to Jeremy. It's just happening to Keir Starmer. I think you could argue he is playing a role in what's unfolding. And then I also thought it was interesting that he talked about the timeline. So Keir Starmer used the broadcast round to say that he had actually updated Jeremy Corbyn the night before he gave his speech on the report broadly about what he wanted to say. That's important in terms of the timeline of this, because if you believe Keir Starmer's account, that means that Jeremy Corbyn knew Keir Starmer's line was going to be anyone who downplays anti-Semitism, says that, you know, it isn't such a big problem as the report and others have said it is, doesn't have a place in the Labour Party, before he went and put out his own statement where he said it was overstated. So that would suggest, if you listen to what Keir Starmer said, that Jeremy Corbyn would have known full well what he was potentially risking when he put out his statement. In terms of, I think, where we go from here, it's clear Keir Starmer doesn't want to move from his position. I think, obviously, as we talked about yesterday, it's a question as to where the suspension goes. But you are seeing kickback from parts of the party. You're seeing some Labour MPs. So, for example, Zara Sultana, an MP from the 2019 intake, coming out and supporting Jeremy Corbyn. So I think there is a question now. It's not just John McDonnell. You know, there are other people coming out the fold. So what's Keir Starmer's line on that? Is it acceptable for all those people to support Jeremy Corbyn? Or do they also have to be questioned because they are endorsing Jeremy Corbyn's position effectively? So I think that it is still fairly messy. I think that Keir Starmer's probably takeaway is that he looks like he's being tough on anti-Semitism. And if you look at the attacks coming from the Tories, I think they have been softened a bit by his action. But I still think there are questions, which is, if Keir Starmer was really, you know, so found it all so objectionable, he did serve in Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet for quite a long period when lots of this was happening. Now, I think you can argue you can be more effective inside the tent. He wouldn't have become Labour leader, or, you know, if he hadn't had those people on the side. But I think there's still going to be a little bit kickback as to, you know, him doing this now when he didn't say some things previously.
And James, as for the left of the party, some union leaders like Len McCluskey has come out fighting. We hear that Jeremy Corbyn convened a war cabinet yesterday. Can they do anything? Is that going to come off anything over the weekend?
They obviously can, but how much harm that does Keir Starmer, I don't know. I think if Keir Starmer ends up in a fight with Jeremy Corbyn, people always say, oh, the electorate don't like divided parties. I personally think I would make an exception in this case. I think it would show to lots of voters that Keir Starmer is moving on from the Corbyn era. And there is absolutely no doubt that at the last election, two things delivered the Tory electoral coalition. One was get Brexit done, the other was fear of Jeremy Corbyn. And so, you know, the more Keir Starmer says, I'm not Jeremy Corbyn, the better it is, I think, for him and for the Labour Party. I also think that if you talk about the idea of some kind of slightly febrile speculation about a kind of splinter breakaway party, I suspect that where that party would draw the most support is seats that Labour are winning very comfortably anyway. So it wouldn't actually do that much damage them. I think that, you know, the fact that Keir Starmer is out doing broadcasts this morning, you look at the news last night, this row is benefiting Keir Starmer politically, because in some ways, as Katie said, you could see a situation where the report comes out and the questions for Keir Starmer are very awkward, which is, well, you sat in shadow cabinet all the way through when the events detailed in this report happened. What's your justification for your behaviour? Instead, the argument is now about his decision to suspend Jeremy Corbyn. The Tory attempts to link Starmer to Corbyn, I don't think are landing, because it's quite hard to do that when the first item is Keir Starmer has suspended Jeremy Corbyn. But this all depends on Jeremy Corbyn, and I think it's not certain Jeremy Corbyn's level of self-righteousness means he might not do this. That you can see a situation where Jeremy Corbyn says something like, I never meant to minimise or downplay the issue, and that's enough for everyone to move on. But whether Jeremy Corbyn, who seems so incapable of saying sorry on this point, is able to do that or not is another matter. But I think for Keir Starmer, showing that Labour is under new leadership, as he likes to say at every opportunity, you know, this is a dramatisation of that. And I think Labour will be further buoyed by a poll in this morning's Evening Standard by Ipsos Mori, showing Labour 5 points ahead. Now, this isn't the first poll we've had showing Labour ahead. There was an Oppenheim poll at the weekend with Labour 2 points ahead. But this is the first poll we've had showing Labour significantly ahead. And now, obviously, all the usual caveats apply. This is just one poll. This poll was taken before all of this happened, so you can't make a link between the two. But I think if this suggests that Labour are moving into a position where Labour are in the lead more often, then I think that will further bolster Starmer's position. Someone very close to Boris Johnson said to me a few weeks back that the Labour Party has a whiff of power in its nostrils, and that is enough to anaesthetise 90% of them, of its MPs. And I think this is true. I think if the Tories were anywhere near as far ahead now as they were at the beginning of this parliament, I think there'll be far more resistance to what Keir Starmer is doing. I think it is because Keir Starmer's strategy in the early signs are that it's working. I think that gives him more room for manoeuvre.
Very interesting. And while it's nice to talk about something other than COVID, I'm afraid the papers are all about COVID as well. And it seems like the worst might still be yet to come, Katie, with talk of tier four now.
Yes, a new tier to add to this. Probably the opposite of a nice cake.
It's also not very simple.
Complicated and bad tiered cake. But anyway, yeah, we may be getting tier four, which should be a further tightening. I think what's interesting here is if you look at the backdrop to this week, it's countries across Europe, France going into lockdown but keeping schools open, Germany moving to a point where it's closing bars and so forth. So there seems to be a trend. In the past, I think it was a fairly good guess during the first phase of coronavirus that he wanted to know what the UK government was going to do. You could look to European countries. So it does feel as though the tide is pushing towards stricter measures. But I think the introduction of tier four is interesting because it suggests that even though we're heading to a tightening, the government still wants to stick to a localised, broad approach. So it might look like a national lockdown, it might, you know, but it's not. I think it seems from this, it's going to be unlikely to call that. So you might get one by proxy, which, you know, large parts of England and, you know, tier three and tier four in a few weeks' time, which I think is the expectation. But it will, but I think it's likely to be, at least they're going to try and do it in that way rather than, you know, scrap that system and go for something wider. And I think the other factor, which is probably pushing, you know, in terms of tighter restrictions, if you listen to what Nicola Sturgeon's saying in Scotland, they not only have four tiers, they have five tiers. And I think that, again, she's warning of the fact you might be heading to something very close to a national lockdown if hospitalizations continue. So I think that there is a question if the devolved administrations, and you already have Wales and a circuit breaker, end up in things very close to that, I think it gets harder for things to be more relaxed in England.
James, meanwhile, Boris Johnson's been warned of how dire things could get in hospitals, and you write in your Times column that the peak of hospitalizations could hit by November 11th. That's 2 weeks away. So yeah. Is Boris Johnson going to be batting off attacks from Labour by saying, well, you should have gone for a national circuit breaker when you were told?
I think it is a remarkable change. I think just a few weeks ago, you know, Boris Johnson was in plenty of company in his decision. He had rejected the advice of his scientists and mathematical tighter restrictions, which is what the Irish government had done. He and Emmanuel Macron were saying, look, we've got to keep this local, targeted measures, avoid a catastrophe of a national lockdown. The Irish government have now U-turned and gone with the scientists. Emmanuel Macron announced a national lockdown, albeit one with schools open in France on Wednesday. Now, I think what we are probably looking at, I mean, Katie's house is right, that we're looking at a situation where I think that in the worst hit areas, I think we're quite soon going to end up in a situation where everything but schools are shut. And I think that more and more of the country will end up coming over that. I think that Boris Johnson will stick to this regional approach and, you know, will carry on saying, look, in areas where infection rates are low, what's the point in shutting everything down? But I think you could get to a situation where everywhere but the Scilly Isles is under restrictions. And you know, and if 90% of the population and 90% of the economy is under this, you know, what's the difference between that and a national lockdown? But I think that he will be determined to try and avoid going into a kind of full national lockdown again.
And finally, it's the last few days of the presidential campaign. How fast 4 years come around. Katie, you got any nice plans for Tuesday night when the election is going to go on at 11:30?
Quite limited as to what you can do in terms of where you can be at that time, given that
past curfew.
It's past curfew and closed. So I would hazard a guess I'll be in my flat, or if I'm being crazy, in the office.
James, are Brits going to be celebrating or not on Tuesday night, do you think?
I still think the most likely outcome of this election is a Joe Biden victory. I think obviously because the polls were wrong, people are very nervous about it. I think Joe Biden has more routes to 270 electoral college votes than Donald Trump. I think there's an interesting question about what this result would mean for British politics. I think there is no doubt that a Biden victory would be a bit of a boost to Keir Starmer, I think, for two reasons. One, I think people say, the kind of populist trend in politics that produced Trump and Brexit, you know, people are turning away from that. But also another reason, which is there is a similarity, I think, between Starmer and Biden in this respect, which is neither of them excite the left of their party. Mm. They both do not generate huge enthusiasm. And they both have gone for a kind of small target strategy, not unveiling big policy platforms, instead kind of, you know, talking a kind of language of reassurance. And I think that if Biden were to win, I think it would be seen by many people in the Labour Party as, you know, a sign that that Starmer strategy could work in a UK general election in 2024. Now, I think you can exaggerate the extent to which UK and US politics move in lockstep. And I don't think that there are the links between the Starmer camp and the Biden camp that there were between New Labour and the New Democrats. So I don't think we're going to see a huge copying of tactics or sharing of ideas. And there's no third way style linking philosophy. But I think it would help Keir Starmer. And I think also one other thing, which I think is undoubtedly true, that, you know, when Ed Miliband went to visit Barack Obama, he got the kind of briefest of brush bites. So it was kind of rather awkward picture with a kind of plastic bag in which Ed Miliband had bought his present to Barack Obama.
Oh my God, no.
Because Obama essentially had no particular beef with David Cameron. You know, indeed, one of Obama's key aides, Jim Messina, actually went to work on the Tory re-election campaign in 2015. I should say another one, David Axelrod, went to work on the Miliband one. But, you know, it was, I don't think Obama had a particular view. I think that Starmer would receive a much warmer welcome than that in a Biden White House, because there is, you know, I still think that the Biden team still very much view Brexit through the prism of Donald Trump, and there are still senior people who are very cross about what Boris Johnson said about, you know, after Obama's intervention in the 2016 referendum. So I think in those ways it would be a help to Keir Starmer, but I wouldn't exaggerate the extent to which, you know, that British and American politics work in lockstep.
And James, you mentioned there that polls are saying Biden's going to win. We will be speaking on Spectator TV, the US version, on Friday, to a pollster who says that Trump's going to win. He actually thinks that Trump's going to get majority of the popular vote. So if you want to see why he thinks that, then go on to spectator.co.uk/TV.
I think there is also another interesting question here, which is, what is the mood of the US electorate? And this is the other reason why I think Biden will win, which is, I think in 2016... Hillary Clinton was loathed. I think Joe Biden is quite hard to loathe. And I also think that Trump had a novelty factor then. And I think that people are just now exhausted by it. I thought it was very telling that in a rally last weekend, Obama's kind of closing argument for Biden and Kamala Harris is, you know, vote for them and you won't have to think about politics every day. You know, vote for them. They're not going to come into your life. You'll just be able to let them get on with it and not think about politics. And I think people are so exhausted by the dramas of the last few years, I think there is that perhaps more of an appeal to that than you think. And I think it's quite a contrast when you think back to 08, when Obama was this massive idealistic figure saying, kind of, join me in this great effort, this massive effort to change America and to bend the arc of the universe. Now it's just, you know, vote Democrat and you won't have to think about politics for a while.
As Lionel Shriver says in the magazine this week, it would be making America boring again, and that's sounds quite good, actually. James and Katie, thanks very much. And we've loved hearing what you think about the podcast on the podcast survey. But if you haven't filled it out yet and you would like a chance to win a bottle of free Paul Roger champagne, then it's my duty to tell you about our podcast survey. So you go to spectator.co.uk/podcast survey. It only takes a few minutes. Katie, James didn't seem to enjoy it that much when I asked him on air the other day what he thought of Paul. What do you think of Paul?
I've got a lot of time for it, and I highly recommend people enter the survey to get their own bottle. I had a very warming sight the other day when I opened the fridge and there were four bottles in the Spectator fridge, and they each had a post-it with my name on it. I took a photo. Unfortunately, I don't think they were all for me, but yeah, it made me very happy, so other people can have that too.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.